The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Fact of the matter is that Harry Dent believes a lot in demographics, believes that they're going to really significantly impact the economy and thus the market going forward here for a while. And Charles and I were talking about that because Charles used to work with Harry for quite a while. And in fact, that's how I met Charles. And so he had a little bit different take on things. So I asked him if he would come on in very short notice. He was kind enough to do that. So for those of you that are not familiar, I'm bringing on Charles Sizemore. Charles is a CFA. He's the Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management. He is the author of the Sizemore Investment Letter. And I encourage you, by the way, to go take a look at it. Get a copy. It's excellent. I get the letter. And by the way, just a kind of little secret for you. I've been in this business for a long time, and I manage most of my assets myself. But there are a couple of people that manage assets outside of me. Manage some of my assets and those of my clients. Some of them are algorithmic programs. You've heard me talk about it before. The big computer programs that have the great stop loss vehicles. They're not as strong on the upside, but they're really great on the downside. And the only other one that is just not a, well, kind of, Charles is kind of a walking computer, as a matter of fact. But the only other one is Charles Sizemore, and Charles manages some of our assets as well as my personal assets. So let me bring on my money manager, Charles Sizemore. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning.
All right, so you and I were talking yesterday, and one of the things that Harry said that you and I kind of had a little different, or you had a different take on, and I'm just kind of picking topics as we go along. But one of the things that Harry is concerned about was a bubble bursting in China. And he was talking about how the Chinese had built these cities and brought these people in from the rural areas into the urban areas. And that because they have and put them to work building cities and places for them to live in and just building other cities. And we've all seen the television documentaries on big empty cities, which frankly are amazing to me. And Harris says that what's going to happen is that basically a bubble will burst in China, and a lot of those people that they drug in from the countryside will go back to the countryside. You had a little different view on that.
Well, I do. And my view is that urbanization is usually a one-way street. And no pun intended on actual one-way streets in urban areas. But when you come from the country and you go to the big city, you get used to a certain lifestyle. You get used to the opportunities there. You don't go back. Mike, you yourself grew up in a small town and moved to Houston, and you have absolutely no desire to ever go back, I'm sure.
Well, that's true, but that's because I milk cows and sucker tobacco, and neither one of those are really fun occupations.
No, right. They're not. But if you feel that way, I promise you that your people in China that were doing the same and then moved to the city, they do feel the same way. Even though the jobs they take in the city are oftentimes not very glamorous, it's working in a factory or doing some sort of low skilled labor. That's still a step up the ladder from milking a cow. You know,
that's true.
Is what it is.
You did agree that there was a bubble in China yesterday, but you think the kind of the air is going to come out of it slowly then versus having it pop and cause a world calamity.
Well, I think it very easily could pop. I just don't think it's going to happen just yet. And the reason is China's economy was trucking along at a just enormous growth rate there, 9-10% a year. It was nuts. It's since slowed. The government intentionally slowed down. How often that happened when the government wants the economy to grow slower? But that's the situation the Chinese officials were in. They saw that their economy was growing too fast. They were worried about bubbles forming. They saw, all of these ghost cities popping up, all of these office and residential towers with nobody in them. That was starting to concern them. They saw a lot of speculation and just among regular everyday citizens speculating in property. So they really tried to throw a blanket over that and slow that down, and they did. Growth has slowed down to about 7% now, which, hey, we'd all love to have 7% here, of course. That's over on this side of the world. But in China, 7% is actually slow. So they actually have put the brakes on over the last couple of years. That they took away some monetary stimulus and fiscal stimulus, and they tried to slow things down. Now it looks like they're trying to ramp it back up again. They're concerned they slowed down a little too far, a little too fast, and they're going to have an unemployment problem. So what I would see happening in the immediate future here is the Chinese government gooses the economy again, tries to spur some more investment, tries to spur some more growth. Now, China doesn't need any more investment right now. I mean, they're so overbuilt, it's ridiculous. However, that's more of a long-term problem. That's not a problem for this month, this quarter, or even this year. So I would see China hitting something, hitting a brick wall of sorts sometime within the next 5 years, but I just don't see it happening today.
Okay, I don't remember when Harry said he thought it was going to happen. I don't think it was going to be first quarter of next year. Now he was talking about the market, and I really shouldn't put you and Harry together. So I think I'm going to stop up against each other. I'm going to stop that. What are your thoughts on the market? A lot of folks out there believe that this pullback, and in fact, you and I talked about it yesterday, that whether or not did we have a pullback or was it significant enough? I mean, historically, it was just a pause because it's about 5%, and pullbacks require a 10% move. Do you think we're going to add on and get a full pullback, or do you think we're finished, that we've had the market's had the rest that it needs, and that it's going to move forward now? Because there's an awful lot of people. In fact, what concerns me is so many people are optimistic about the fourth quarter. I don't hear enough naysayers out there, and that always concerns me.
Let me see one last thing about China, and then I'll jump right into that.
Okay, go right in.
Yeah, Harry's main demographic model is the spending wave, which tracks the number of people entering and exiting their peak spending years.
Right.
I'm a big believer in that. I think that was just groundbreaking, insightful work by Harry. And looking at China's spending wave, it peaks sometime between 2015 and 2020. So that's not the only factor. There's, demographics are the biggest story over the long term, but in the short term, these things can be affected by government stimulus and by anything under the sun. So
right.
I would imagine Harry's timeline there is sometime between 2015 and 2020. Now,
that's probably right.
Now, back to the markets.
Charles, I tell you what, we've only got about a minute to go. So I don't want you to get in the middle of something. But when we come back, what I want to talk to you about is a couple of things. I want to talk to you about what your viewpoint is of the market going forward. Have we had enough of a pause, as I mentioned? And then I also we can either push that later on in the segment, because I want to talk to you about you wrote a really interesting article segment in your latest newsletter about Singapore, which is right outside of China. And so I want to talk about that too. So when we come back, folks, we've got Charles Sizemore, a CFA, Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management. And I'll be back to you in just a moment. Stay tuned.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, Charles, we were talking before the break, and I'll let you kind of take off from where you left off, because what I like to do is I'd like you to talk about Singapore. We'll move away slowly back to the United States, because you mentioned it, and folks, Charles writes something called the Sizemore Investment Letter. And Charles, tell them how they can go and take a look at that, and I highly recommend, folks, that you subscribe to this letter. I'll tell you, this letter does something that very few letters does. Charles comes right out, tells you when to buy it, tells you why you should buy it. If something goes wrong, he comes and tells you why it went wrong. So many investment letters, like, they kind of pretend nothing happened. So they'll throw out a bunch of recommendations, and then suddenly they're not talking about a security anymore because it hasn't done what they thought, and suddenly it disappears from the portfolio, and they didn't really tell you, but, you know, like, oh, yeah, I sold that. Oh, you still own that? Oh, I sold that months ago. Did I forget to tell you? You know, that's kind of how some of these letters are. But Charles is really straightforward because not everything works out. Now, frankly, most of his does. You've heard us talk about this before, that you'll be getting advice from a guy who 2 years in a row, 1 year he won it flat out, and then last year he lost in the last 30 or last 20 minutes or something like that. But there's a contest in which you choose a stock in January that you think is going to outperform for the whole year. You don't get to change. And in 2011, he won. In 2012, he was winning until like the last 20 minutes or so and barely lost. And this year, Charles, are you still ahead? You were ahead the last time we had you on.
Well, I checked yesterday, and I was up by about 3 points. So I'm hanging on to first place, but it's going to be a tight race, which I welcome.
Unbelievable.
Keeps it exciting.
Frankly, it's unbelievable that you come anywhere near that. It's amazing you can do that consistently. So, folks, Charles, how can they go take a look at the Sizemore letter?
Sure. Go to sizemoreletter.com to check it out. And if you want to see a couple free issues, just email me at subscriptions@sizemoreletter.com. I'm happy to share a few issues to let you check it out.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, all right, folks, sizemoreletter.com. Anyway, Charles, take it away.
Sure. I forgot what we were talking about, so we'll just jump right into Singapore.
Let's talk about Singapore, yeah.
All righty. Singapore, I love Singapore. Singapore, in many ways, is everything that the West, and particularly the United States, was doing right 100, 150 years ago. It's a little country that was a nothing, just third-world dump on a little rock, pretty much, that over the last 50 years has worked and built itself into a first-rate, first-world country. Singapore has living standards that are comparable to Western Europe. It's one of the best banking centers in the world. They have a very positive attitude towards trade and business. It's just a remarkable little country. And it's right smack dab in the middle of Southeast Asia and a lot of the trade routes that go there. And it's all of its neighbors are emerging markets. So while Singapore is not itself an emerging market anymore, it has emerged. It's surrounded by emerging markets, and it benefits from their growth because it's such an important trading hub. As its numbers grow, that comes back and benefits Singapore. Now, it's sensitive to the global economy. When the global economy has a deep recession, Singapore gets hit hard, but then every time it comes back, Singapore comes back even stronger. So it's a volatile little economy due to its exposure to trade, but it's an impressive little economy. And what happened recently is with growth slowing in China, investors started to pull out of Singapore a little bit. They weren't sure what was going to happen there. And then the second punch was the Fed with this tapering talk. When the Fed started talking about scaling back its quantitative easing, people pulled their money out of first they pulled their money out of the bond market here. They also pulled their money out of bond-like investments, such as a certain real estate investment trust and master limited partnerships and things like that. And then they also pulled their money out of more speculative sectors like emerging markets. And since Singapore kind of gets lumped in with these, Singapore saw a big outflow as well. And where Singapore's REITs, you know, Singapore has REITs, and most listeners probably know what a REIT is. It's a publicly traded vehicle to buy real estate. So rather than having to go out and buy a building yourself, you can buy a company that invests in a portfolio of buildings. U.S. has a large REIT sector, had it for a long time. I love the sector. I buy REITs. I'm always buying and selling REITs. But Singapore also has a REIT sector. And when all this was going on with investors just fleeing the region, some of these REITs are now trading at, you know, 80% of their book value. You know, that means the REIT is worth less than its underlying portfolio. You could, in theory, buy the REIT, sell off all the properties, and make a 20% profit in addition to any rents you collect along the way. So I see some great opportunities over there. I love this. I love this as a value play, and I love it as a long-term investment in an exciting little country.
All right, that's great. And in fact, you have recently added of Singapore REIT to your portfolio. So now what do you think about emerging markets? You know, they've had an awful year. I mean, they've just got decimated. Looks like they're turning right now. Is this just kind of a pause before they take another leg down, or what do you think?
Well, this is what I think. Emerging markets started to take a hit earlier this year as China slowed. As China slowed down, that affected all of the countries that produce raw materials. So Brazil got hit particularly hard because of the China slowdown. Now, what's ironic is Brazil has been complaining for 3 or 4 years now about how expensive their currency is. They declared currency war. Their finance minister went on the news and declared currency war and said that Brazil wasn't going to lose. They were going to push down the value of the real, their currency. Well, in this emerging market rout that's happened over the last couple months, their currency has taken a hit. Now, all of a sudden, they're trying to strengthen their currency. So apparently, they got what they wanted, but a little bit too much. So this is a long way of saying that emerging markets have taken a beating due to China slowing down and, more recently, the Fed with its tapering talk. This has been a 1-2 punch that just killed the entire sector. I do see that running its course here, and what I could see is the impetus to really start a new bull market here, or to at least mark the bottom, is the Fed's supposed to come out here within the next week and clarify what its tapering plans are. If tapering plans are not as bad as everyone's fearing they're going to be, and that's what I suspect. I think people are just, because they don't know, they're expecting the worst. And when the news comes in that's just not as bad as feared, I think we could have a nice run in emerging markets. I really do.
Okay. Well, I haven't met. Did you want to say something, Peggy?
No. Well, there's not enough time now.
Okay. Yeah, we're gonna Charles. You're gonna have to hang on if you don't mind for another break, because I still haven't got out of you what I think where you think the markets are going. So, stay with us, folks. We're talking to Charles Sizemore, CFA, just a brilliant guy, one of the brightest guys in the room, as I like to say, and chief investment officer of Sizemore Capital Management. Go to CharlesSizemore.com to get more information on Charles. Stay tuned. Well, you're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street every day. We'll be back to you in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We save the best for last. We've got Charles Sizemore, CFA and Chief Investment Officer, Sizemore Capital Management, and a personal friend of mine, and one of the guys who manages my money, and one of the folks that we use for not only my money, but for clients. So if you want to talk more about that, you can give us a call, 855-624-4004, 855-624-4004. We'd be happy to talk to you about that, or you can come in, or we'll meet with you, because Charles is one of the smartest guys in the room. He is CFA and Chief Investment Officer of Sizemore Capital Management. If you want to know more about Charles, just go to CharlesSizemore.com, CharlesSizemore.com, and he'll be glad to send you a couple of complimentary copies of his newsletter, or you can just go to StraightTalkMoney.com, and we'll send you a couple of complimentary copies just to give you a feel, but you'll really like it, particularly for those of you out there that manage your own portfolio or like to really get in the weeds and like to really understand how to analyze a stock and how to even look at a stock. Charles's newsletters are very insightful on how to take apart a stock and really what to look for. You'll learn a lot from them. Really, it's just, they're not sales pieces. They're really good research pieces and very easy to read. I couldn't recommend them more. So go to CharlesSizemore.com. All right, Charles. All right, you and Peggy were having a very lively conversation about Turkey during the break. I'll let you guys pick up on Turkey for a little bit, but then I also want to know from you, Charles, a couple things. Where do you think the markets are going this next quarter or the next year? And then what do you think of gold? We always get kind of comments about gold. I've never been a big believer in gold. I never recommended buying gold. And gold's getting its head handed to it again, and now it's back below 1,300. So that's what I like to cover in this remaining 10 minutes. So,
well, in my conversation, there was a story out this week, and he was talking about emerging markets, that that eyes are looking at Turkey as an emerging market and a good place for investment. Their economy's been really pretty strong. possibly not being in the Euro has been a good blessing for them. And I wanted to get Charles's thoughts on that.
Charles.
Dart,
are you there?
I'm here. You guys hear
me? Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things on Turkey. To start, the market there is cheap. By the Financial Times estimate, the Turkish market trades at about 7x earnings. That's fantastic. But looking at the bigger picture here, Turkey straddles Europe and Asia. And because of their history and their geographic location here, they benefit both from the European market. So as Europe starts to claw out of its recession, and it already has, it's out of recession now, that will benefit Turkey. But at the same time, Turkey is really the gateway to the Middle East. So as the Middle East stabilizes, Turkish companies should be in a unique position there to really benefit. So I love Turkey. I love the story behind it. I think it has all the potential in the world. The only big, you know, flashing, you know, red light here, the warning light, is what about the political stability over there? That's something that you have to watch out for. It's the reason you shouldn't put your entire nest egg in Turkish stocks. You should always be, you should be careful. You should keep it prudent. But if they're able to stay stable over there, I love Turkey. I think it's a great long-term pick.
Okay. All right. Now let me focus you back on this side of the pond. And tell me what you think the market's going to do in the fourth quarter of this year and then into next year.
You bet. Now, we've had what I would call a slow-motion correction over the last 3 months here. The market's gone mostly sideways, hasn't been a lot of direction. There's been some good weeks. There's been some bad weeks. I think that's the correction. Now, usually corrections are shorter and they're steeper. You get a good 10% knocked off the price. I just don't think we got that this time. I think it's a sideways correction. It is what it is. What I see happening is once the Fed gives us some guidance here about what to expect from tapering, we'll know. We'll know what to expect, and we can deal with it. I think with that uncertainty lifted, I see the market going higher the rest of this year. I don't see it being grand slam, 20% higher or anything like that, but I think it drifts a good between 5 and 10%, I think, is completely reasonable.
Okay, and what about next year? Are we going to have a good year? Are we going to pull back? What's going to happen?
You know, I would expect at least the first quarter or so of next year to be good, to be strong. We do see Europe coming back. I think we're going to see emerging markets coming back. All of that should bode well, and the way markets are related here, what's good in one part of the world usually comes back on us. I expect that to last for at least the first quarter. After that, we'll see.
All right. So you're good through the first quarter. For next two quarters, which coincide with really the best time of the markets, because they're usually between October and April, and kind of uncertain beyond that. Do you think that Bernanke taking away the economic crack, as Harry likes to call it, taking away the stimulus will have any impact? Because certainly when he even mentioned the word taper in March, led us to our first sell-off of the year.
Well, that's just it. It already has had an impact. I mean, could it have more impact? Could it continue to impact the market? Well, it could. But I think the worst has already hit us. Markets are anticipatory. And when he telegraphed to the world, hey, guys, I'm going to be pulling back this quantitative easing, the markets reacted. I mean, they've already reacted to it. That's why we've had this on again off again correction for the last 3 months. So could we have more? We could. I think we've already seen most of the damage.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah, I kind of feel that for that. Certainly for now, we do. Now, what about gold? Every time the precious metal starts rising, all the gold bugs come out and say, oh, there we are. See, we're on another run. They did it a couple of weeks ago. And it looks to me like a head fake. I mean, basically what happened is gold rallied up a little bit, and then boom. Now they're getting their head handed to them again. I've never been a big fan of gold. I've always said you couldn't take a block of it down and buy a loaf of bread. And what are your thoughts on gold and whether or not gold really should be in an investor's portfolio?
My view on gold is this. If you want to have a couple coins in a lockbox somewhere just in case, the same reason you might want to have a gun in a lockbox or a fake passport, go right ahead. If you think there's some, shocking reason why I need all that, then who am I to tell you no? But as an investment, I hate it. I really do. It doesn't pay interest. It doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't do anything. It just sits there and looks shiny.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I wouldn't touch it right now. And I think the long, you know, decade-long bull market in gold is over.
Yep, I believe the same thing. Well, all right, then. So we kind of have a few minutes now. What areas do you like? I mean, we've got a lot of people out there, and we've got some that manage their own assets. We've got others, though, that work with advisors that would like to have more knowledge. I think everybody that listens to our show would like to have more knowledge. Are there sectors that you like out there? I'm not asking for individual stocks unless you want to give some, but are there sectors out there that you like? Oh, and we've got you got 30 seconds. Sorry.
All righty. Well, sure. I would say, you know, to me, the easiest money to be made is going to be in the sectors that have recently gotten hit. I actually love a lot of REITs and master limited partnerships right now because that's where the pricing is the most attractive. To me, you can scoop up some good shares, plan to hold on to them for a while, and just milk those dividends.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.